I want to make something absolutely clear. If you thought there was some working group coming to the rescue, then I want you to know that you're wrong. This is it. There's nobody else hidden away on some other floor. There is just us. And we are failing.
Hi, and welcome to another one of those fun little episodes of the Unnamed Movie Podcast where I decide to exclude my co-hosts because I'm tired of hearing them on a general basis. And I invite someone who I truly find interesting onto the podcast. And today I have with me Mr. Corey Attad from the movie Mezzanine. how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right.
In the last couple of weeks, I think we've had two occasions where this film, one Miss Catherine Bigelow's Zero Dark Thirty has come up, and you have been a big contender in the discussions of this movie.
Yeah.
I guess before we really get into how we feel about this film and where we really disagree, for those of you listening who have no idea as to what this movie is, it's the, I don't want to say documented, but it's the story. It's the story of America's 10-year manhunt for Osama bin Laden. From September 11, 2001 until the eventual, capture and kill of Osama in May 2011. And it's all told through the perspective of this CIA operative named Maya, who's played by Jessica Chastain, who, as I like to think of it, is the motherfucker who did everything.
Okay.
So I'm just going to put it out there. I love this movie. It made my top 10, but I really want to hand it straight to you, Corey. What is it that really has been grinding your gears about this film?
Okay. So this isn't, you know, a disaster of a movie. I don't think it's even like that bad. I think on Letterboxd, I think I gave it like a 2.5 or a 3 out of 5. Like it's like right on the line of being good. I think the last, I can't remember how long it is, but it's like the last act with the actual raid on Abbottabad is, you know, spectacular filmmaking. It's like extremely suspenseful. Really, really great. So like, you know, the movie is, its existence is worthwhile just for that. I think it's the rest of the movie where the problems are. And it generally comes down to the fact that there is one central character that you're supposed to kind of go along on this journey with, and she is not really a character. At best, she's a cipher for the audience and for symbols of America and, you know, I guess obsession. But there's no actual meat to the character. And because of that, I was never engaged by her interest in finding bin Laden, and thus for 2 hours I was basically not interested in finding bin Laden until they actually like figure out where he is and go and get him, at which point it you know picked up.
You got to see people blow up doors, and you're like, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's more than that. Building up, like, basically, once they figure out that there's this compound in Abbottabad, it actually does start to get a little bit more interesting because there's more direct detective work going on. So even though there's not really much character action, just the hunt itself, it's like watching a Law and Order episode, you know what I mean? Like, you know, better made, but it has the same kind of appeal where, you know, they're piecing together the facts. You see them going around the city, you know, kind of following this car and sort of putting the details together. And that part of it is, you know, it's engaging on that level alone. And then when it gets to the raid itself, you bring in the really methodical action element. Not only is it thrilling as an action set piece, but it's genuinely interesting to watch because you get a sense of the reality of it, of watching how these, you know, SEAL teams actually do their job. And it's, you know, extremely nerve wracking and yet they approach it with such professionalism. So that section, it's legitimately really, really good. Yeah.
Is it weird that in that final sequence when they're doing the raid and like, it's obvious when you're watching it that while some people there are being murdered out of self-defense, even though they're not the exact target, there are a couple who you see who are just murdered because they're in the way. There's this woman who gets shot, and there's a point where they kind of take a little breather before they go into the next building, and a guy says something like, it's kind of a mess. There's this one woman who's just going to bleed out there because I didn't really kill her properly.
Right.
And that just felt very weird in the moment. Because you're watching, as you say, this methodical thing where you kind of imagine that all of these people who are participating in this raid are going to go into full, like, robot mode of some sort where they're not really letting emotions or their general thoughts come into what they're doing. They're just going to try and complete the mission. But that one little moment makes it feel like they actually do have more than that to them while they still keep being the methodical capture and kill mode.
I mean, the brilliance of that sequence is partly that you already know the outcome. It's like everybody knows that, you know, they got up to the top and, you know, found him in his bedroom basically and shot him, although not necessarily exactly how that went down, but you get the idea. They found Osama, they killed him. So you know that going in, and yet when you're watching it, you're not really watching it to see are they going to get him or aren't they, but more in this situation that's so obviously like it's a chaotic situation. You know what I mean? They're going into a house. They don't even know if he's there for sure. And, you know, they don't know what kind of gunfire they might meet or, you know, what's going to happen. It's in the middle of the night. It's in a suburban town, basically. There's all these variables at play, and it's thrilling to watch them go through it in as professional a way as possible. It's like going into chaos, trying to control it. And you always feel like it's just on the edge of, you know, everything spinning out of control, kind of like the helicopter actually does. It's like at every point, everything could have gone so horribly wrong. And you feel that tension in it. It's pretty impressive. And it's similar in that way to the ending of Argo, except that, you know, the ending of Argo was pretty made up. And this one's like all real, which makes it even crazier.
Well, you see, herein lies one of the few things that I've discovered about myself in why I like this movie, is that while I don't doubt the amount of research that Mark Bowle and Catherine Bigelow put into doing this movie, I've done as best as I can to detach myself from the reality of this movie. I kind of look at it with the same viewpoint that I look at an Argo, where I know that there is reality within the movie, and it's like every other movie which says based on or inspired by. I know there's reality there, but I already go in it with a grain of salt, saying there's embellishment somewhere. And, well, if I'm not willing to believe it 100%, I'm going to not take it as fact at all.
Right. Well, I mean, I suppose that's a good way of looking at it, although I think that there's two things about the movie that somewhat fly in the face of that. The first is that the way the movie is built and structured, it gives the audience, they're not even really subconscious. They're pretty conscious signals that the movie is being, if not directly factual, at the very least accurate to how things play out. So, you know, whether it's the jargon used or the fact that they incorporate news footage or that kind of thing. So you get this idea of, you know, when they're going in to do that raid, is everything about it 100% real? Did everybody there actually say the things that the characters in the movie say? That I don't really know, but you get the sense of the accuracy of the presentation. Whereas with Argo, it's fairly obvious. I mean, it's like, besides the fact that, you know, you wouldn't actually know what the Iranians were doing at that at that exact moment. The idea of like a car chasing them on the runway is a little bit over the top, but like it creates a drama. And I think that what's impressive in that sequence in Zero Dark Thirty is that it doesn't need to embellish in quite that way to get the drama. In fact, it gets the drama by grounding things. So you're watching the movie and you feel that it's grounded. It feels realistic. Whether it's real, like in a literal sense or not, is besides the point. It feels grounded in a way that that makes it that much more tense. I mean, I could go on and on about that sequence. It's like I think my favorite moment in that sequence was when they go into the room with the office with all the files and the computers and everything, and they just start picking up the computers and smashing them so that they can get at the hard drives really quickly.
And of course, that one guy is like, shit, you know, it just picks up a whole tower.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, I think what I loved about that bit is that you're watching it going like, oh yeah, I guess that is kind of how they would do it, because they're not going to go and like, you know, they can't carry all these computers and yet they can't use screwdrivers and open them all up, just smash them, right? I mean, even if the hard drives get damaged, I'm sure the CIA has people who will get as much information off of them as possible. So that was one of those moments where like it was so obviously realistic, and yet it was something that I never would have thought of on my own. You know what I mean? So I'm like watching going like, oh yeah, that's pretty clever.
Okay. So to pull it back into the part of the film that we're not talking about, which is okay, Everything leading up to the raid, from the, what people are calling the wall of noise, which opens the movie, which is just basically cut and paste of a lot of audio clips of the 9/11 attack, which, I mean, the first time I saw this film, I saw it on a screener at home and it didn't really affect me that much. But when I went to the theater yesterday to watch this movie and I was just trapped in the theater in this darkness, yeah, with the noise going on, it is pretty effective in what it does. It kind of, mm-hmm, even makes you go back to think as to where you were at that point in time. And then it moves forward into the detainee program, and it kind of chapterizes the entire story moving forward. And where I praise this movie for Kathryn Bigelow is how it's able to cohesively put forward a through line of how they moved from 9/11 to the raid. 'Cause I felt like it was well put forward, and that's where I come forward as saying this movie is brilliant in how it's executed.
Yeah, and that's, I guess, where I would depart. I think, look, it's a little bit difficult because I don't care to be accusatory of Bigelow's, you know, process or her intentions. I think the opening sequence with the audio tapes, you know, again, it's a great bit of filmmaking. I do somewhat wonder at what she's accomplishing there. Not only what she sets out to accomplish, but kind of what the actual effect of it is, and whether that's a good thing. I wouldn't say that, that what she does is to trivialize, but I think that she draws some parallels and juxtaposes some ideas there, particularly in terms of, hearing those voices of people about to die and then immediately seeing a person being tortured. These are parallels and juxtapositions that I'm not entirely comfortable with, because I'm not entirely sure what the purpose of it is. And I suppose, you know, this kind of gets into my general feeling about the movie is that the movie approaches everything with a cold distance, a kind of ambivalence. And, you know, in a way, I suppose that's kind of praiseworthy. I see it as somewhat cowardly. And so in that moment, you know, somebody could watch that transition between the black screen and audio to the torture and go, oh, well, look at what we immediately, like, look at what we're doing in the name of, you know, these people who died. We're basically treating a guy and he's now in that same position. Not about to die, but, you know, being tortured and everything. And kind of that's an interesting idea. But then, you know, you could look at it as just this guy deserves what he's getting because of what we just heard. You know, it can juice the audience in a way. It can make the audience feel shocked and angry in a way. Again, I don't care to say that Bigelow's motives are a problem. I just think that the execution leaves a little bit too much room for the audience to put itself into without the director guiding things.
Well,
and I tend to prefer a bit more of a balance in that respect.
Well, okay, here's a question. When I opened, I didn't want to use the word documented, but it's very obvious from the view, from the way that the movie is presented, that Bigelow wants to make you feel like this is full stop period, all T's crossed, the truth. Would you be more willing to discuss what was going on at that point if it was a full-blown documentary that followed the through line as opposed to a narrative film like this?
I mean, look, documentaries have biases and points of view and perspective as well. I suppose the difference in a documentary is that you can more easily run through the facts of the situation and say, you know, this happened, then this happened, then this happened, then this happened. You know, maybe you frame it a bit, maybe you don't, but as a document, it has serious validity because it's a literal document. Whereas this film attempts to document, but it also, you know, it's compressing, it's fictionalizing, it's creating, kind of a fictionalized account that's meant to document. And I don't know, you run into kind of tricky territory there. And I feel like if you're going to do that, if you're going to fictionalize, then you also need to provide a bit more context than Bigelow allows. Anytime that you feel like you're going to get a sense of what is this film trying to say, she pulls away, which actually makes the ending of the film to me a bit unearned on two levels, partly a character level, although we can get into that. But just even on a thematic level, I don't think that the film does quite enough groundwork in terms of setting up a perspective for that ending to happen where, you know, basically it's Maya getting on the plane and the pilot asks, you know, where are you going to go now or where do you want to go now? And kind of the last shot is her beginning to cry. And, you know, it's an interesting ending. And in a different version of this film, it might have worked better for me. But when it came about, it just felt unearned. It felt tacked on. It felt like, okay, we've gone through all of this. Let's kind of throw an existential question back at the audience, because otherwise it'll appear like the movie is too rah-rah about killing a terrorist.
About basically murdering someone in relative cold blood.
Well, I mean, justified or not, it doesn't matter. You could, you know, be somebody who's like, look, I believe in the death penalty, and this guy, you know, he didn't go through a trial, but he so clearly himself out there as this criminal. Fine, killing him is a good thing.
No, I'm sure it wouldn't be difficult to get a group of individuals to agree to kill this man.
The killing him is almost besides the point. I think that the movie goes out of its way, quite respectfully, to avoid a rah-rah kind of tone, which, you know, even when it happens, when they actually kill him, it's almost an anti-climax. And then you never see his face. And that actually all worked very well for me. But that last scene where it tries to put kind of a button on this and wrap it all up, it reveals two things to me. And, you know, one of them is that, like I said, the film didn't lay the groundwork thematically for that ending. But then on top of that, it didn't lay the character work for that ending. Because essentially, when you get to that point, I'm not there with the character. I almost can't even understand why she's crying. Like, I understand why she's crying. I get it. But, like, I don't feel it with her. I don't totally empathize. I get that it's there because it's thematically important to end there, to end with that scene. But the character was so thin, and I didn't get to know her almost at all. And so I don't feel with her in that moment. And so it ends up just feeling like a thematic point, like a cheap thematic point to end on.
So a lot earlier, when you were kind of brushing over a lot of your problems with the film, you mentioned how you didn't like Maya mainly because you saw her as a cipher, and completely emotionless and just a waste of a character, more or less.
She's not emotionless. She goes through quite a bit of emotion, but as a, you know, in terms of building a character, you know, there is, I tend to find there's two ways to build a character, and one of them is in the writing. And I think the writing lets the character down in a big way in this film, which is that we don't know much about her. Even from scene to scene, like, you know, not even as an issue of history, but even from scene to scene, we don't always fully understand what is motivating her. And then here and there, it gives motivation, like after her friend is killed and she is like, you know, I'm going to get these fuckers or whatever. It simplifies the motivation. And so the character feels ultimately empty on a writing level. But then, you know, sometimes you'll get an actor who's able to still convey all of that. And, you know, Jessica Chastain is a great actor. I love her in pretty much everything. But in this film, you know, she's given a thin character, and I don't think she quite brings that extra level. She's solid in the movie, and she carries it, but she doesn't add anything to my emotional understanding of the character, which to me is somewhat unfortunate.
Well, here lies the thing that I was kind of going at. You say that the motivation comes in at basically the second half after her friend is killed. But for that entire first half, is it that you're not quite sure what her motivation is and why she's moving from A to B in this situation?
Yeah, basically. I mean, I guess this is where that opening sequence comes in, which is that opening sequence, I think, really is a little bit meant to juice the audience into understanding, okay, these were the stakes. This is why we really wanted to get bin Laden. And that way we don't need to fully see what her emotional motivation is. We just get it. It's like, obviously we need to get this guy. So she's working on getting him, and that's it. But that that's too simple for me. It doesn't allow me to invest in the character. And quite frankly, the first half of the movie doesn't have quite enough, you know, deep detailed detective work for me to get involved on that level either. So I was kind of caught in this middle ground where I'm like, I should be going along with it because I'm invested in the character, but I'm not invested in the character. And so I'm kind of floating.
So you're basically saying that when you see Pulp Fiction and you see Harvey Keitel come up, you don't know why he's trying to get Jules and why can't I remember fucking, John Travolta's character name at this point out of their situation. You're saying, basically what I'm saying is that with Jessica Chastain for the first half of this movie, and I think the same can be applied to Jason Clarke's character, Dan, is that they're professionals. You threw out the word, they're detectives. They have been handed a job and they are carrying it out. When we see them in that torture scene, and you kind of have this moment later on in the torture sequence that opens where they all leave the room but Jessica Chastain, and the guy looks at her and calls Jason Clarke an animal and asks for help, and she just looks at him and says, you can help yourself. You even see later on when Jason Clarke introduces her, like, I don't think you even hear her name until this point in the station house with Kyle Chandler. And he says she's a killer from DC. She is the hound dog who's been sent in to go and do this job. Maybe you're not sure as to how good she is at her job yet, and that's what we're learning throughout the actions of this movie. I mean, yes, the big motivation comes in at the point where her friend dies, because you can see that from the beginning to that point, all she's interested is Abu Ahmed.
Mm-hmm.
And her hunt for him, even when she gets, even in doing her regular duties, she finds all the time she can to try and find out what is this Abu Ahmed. We get to see her in a room full of videos, which later on you see her walk out of the darkness. And you can just imagine that she's been there for like 36 hours looking at torture interview scenes, trying to find out more intelligence on this Abu Ahmed. And that is where the character resides. It's not in some full-blown emotional cipher of America. It's a professional trying to get an outcome.
Yeah, even a professional, you often get a sense of who they are as a person, as a human being. And with her, I never quite got that. I got the arc of the character. You know, she starts off a little bit more hesitant to get her hands dirty in a lot of ways. She kind of transitions out of that until, you know, but there's the point where she's running the interrogations. You know, that's all quite clear, but, I find like those are, beats being hit without a character actually forming around it. Whereas Jason Clarke actually, you know, a fairly minor character in the movie, although he has a lot of presence in the opening section. His character is, you know, similarly thinly written, but I found the performance actually brought so much to it. Like, the second that he was on screen, I knew exactly who this person was and what made him tick. And, you know, it's a bit of an ineffable thing, but you get it in the performance. You get the sense of this guy who's just been around the block so many times. You know, this has become rote. It's part of his business. And to a certain extent, he's like, he puts himself into it, but he's been around the block. And as the movie progresses, you see the weariness of that really taking a toll. You know, again, it's partly the plot, it's partly how it's written, but a lot of it just comes from the way he carries himself, the way that he speaks. And I always felt with Jessica Chastain that it's like she's playing a professional, and so she saps herself of emotion, which, you know, might be fair, and there might be people like that. And for all we know, the actual character that this is, the person that this is, this character is actually based on might be like that. You know, she might be like a robot, but a robot is not an interesting character unless there's, you know, serious emotions going on. And that's kind of, that's kind of how I felt. And I think that, you know, if you want to talk about, it's become a bit of a sideshow, the whole torture, aspect of the film. And I don't think that the film condones torture. But I think that some of the signals that the film gives could definitely lead certain audiences to feel like, oh yeah, torture, we did that and it was worth it. Like, it was justified. And part of that is that you see, Jason Clarke, and he's, you know, kind of gung ho, and he has more character. And, you know, even though you're not really supposed to, you're supposed to be a little bit horrified by him, he's the most emotionally involving character in that section of the movie. And then, you know, with all of Maya's, you know, deep detective work, all that she puts into it, a lot of those character changes are made way too subtle, because they're written, in my opinion, in a thin way, and she doesn't bring enough out of it. So, you know, you and I, being kind of schooled film lovers, you know, we see her arc very clearly. We see that, you know, she starts off, you know, professional, but still hesitant to get herself involved in these things. And then until the point when she's kind of essentially lost her soul, and she's running the interrogations on her own. But I wouldn't put it past a lot of people to just straight up miss those beats, because they're not highlighted. And you can say that, well, that's because, Catherine Bigelow is, you know, trying to leave it a bit more, ambiguous or whatever. But I really think that it's just a failure in, how the movie is written and constructed, and to a certain degree acted. It's far too detached. It doesn't sell those beats. It doesn't sell those emotions, in a way that really properly involves the audience. Of course, other people get really swept up in the movie, so I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
Oh, I mean, I always find it interesting, and I guess I didn't really get to see this effect because I'm not in the States, or maybe Afghanistan or Iraq. I don't know if they showed this movie there, but I'm pretty sure that audiences in the States were a lot more affected by this movie, and not so much by what the movie presented, but some of the content of the movie, that they colored it with their own emotions.
Oh, definitely. And you know, a movie will always, be, you know, half what the movie itself brings and half what the audience brings, or, you know, whatever, not necessarily 50%, but you get the idea.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to the torture, I agree that I don't think this movie quite says that torture was worth it, but the only point where it kind of comes up where you think that that Bigelow wanted you to even think about that question was towards the latter half of the movie. There was a point where I think it was Kyle Chandler who wanted more details on some interesting point to allow for her, Jessica Chastain, to keep hunting down her Abu Ahmed lead. And her complaint was, how am I going to find this out? I don't have a detainee program anymore. I can't torture people anymore. Who am I going to ask? The guy who gets a lawyer and then sends a message out, and I can't find anything at that point?
Mm-hmm. And look, I mean, that's frankly, that's a valid mindset. And I'm sure that there were people within, you know, I don't know about specifically the hunt for bin Laden, you know, that the facts on that are disputed, but I'm sure that there were people within the CIA, who were quite sad to see the detainee program go, because they probably, you know, whether it made their jobs easier, they probably felt it made their jobs easier. You know, that's a valid thing to show in a film. I think that, you know, it depends. And I guess partly it depends on what you're feeling about whether a film needs to be moral or not. And I do think that films have a bit of a responsibility to, if not be moral, take a moral stand. You know what I mean? It doesn't need to be like planting a flag in the ground, but it needs to be there. And I think that the film does try in some instances for that. And I certainly think the last scene of the film goes for that. But as I've said, I think the last scene feels a bit too much like an easy button. It's not quite earned. It doesn't connect in quite the way that I think it should have.
Well, I don't know what else to really go on. But on a side note, you kind of brought up one of your favorite parts in this movie had to do with the chapter, the canaries, the actual raid. Rewatching this movie yesterday, I think one of the moments that made me laugh, like how just general character procedurals make me laugh, in this movie was there was a point after, Kyle Chandler had left, Iran, my brain is going crazy, I can't remember the locations anymore, and that entire station, and you see Jessica Chastain go to some guy who you figure out throughout the conversation is the next Kyle Chandler, and she requests something, some ridiculous thing, to which the guy says yes, and she kind of has a moment of shock, and she's like, why are you saying yes so easily? And the guy's like, I've learned from my last predecessor that it's just better for me to say yes. It's easier on my life to say yes to you.
Wrong character? I don't remember. I get the characters a bit mixed up. Although I did love Mark Strong's scene yelling at everybody. It was like,
bring me targets to kill.
It was a little bit of a writerly scene for such a sort of grounded, realistic movie, but like it was still such a joy to see Mark Strong yelling at everybody.
Him and then arguing that the guy isn't a drug dealer.
There were some elements of that I really liked. Like, especially the second half, I think sort of got me a little bit more involved just because there's so much more going on, right? I think the, you know, when it comes to, some of the character humor, when it comes to Maya, the lines themselves were amusing. But I think that they're somewhat like baseless. I mean, that one was probably the best one because it, you know, it almost has nothing to do with her personality and just like how things have transpired. But I do think that sometimes it tries, in the absence of genuine character work going on, it tries to add some humor to things, to lighten things up, live in the film. And, you know, what can I say? It basically works because it kind of keeps you on your toes a little bit, but, I don't know. I kind of go both ways on that.
I mean, how surprising is it? At least it was for me when almost an hour and 45 minutes of this movie has gone and boom, Mark Duplass appears out of nowhere.
That was great. Okay. When he showed up, I was just like, is that Mark Duplass? Oh no, I knew that Joel Edgerton was in this. I knew that Chris Pratt was in this. How did I not know that Mark Duplass? And then the other one that I found really funny was, I'm forgetting his name, John Barrowman, who plays Captain Jack Harkness on Doctor Who and Torchwood.
I'm not a Doctor Who fan, so you're gonna have to be a bit.
He gets into an elevator with James Gandolfini's character at one point. But it was like one scene there where they had some like bureau meeting or something, and he's just there in the background. I think even a little bit out of focus, like you don't really see him. And I like turned to the person next to me. I'm like, is that Captain Jack? We're just like looking. We're like, oh, is that? I can't tell. And then like the next scene, just like still being obscured. And then bam, there was a shot of him. We're like, yes, Captain Jack. So it definitely had that every actor in the world factor that Lincoln had, for example.
Oh, so, yeah, they just came out of the woodwork.
Yep. So many actors. Like, I certainly after the Hurt Locker, I'm sure Bigelow could get together a pretty good cast pretty easily. So, you know, good on her for that. I did actually really like Kyle Chandler in the movie, although I'm finding it a little bit odd that he's become typecast a little bit in that government bureaucrat role.
Yep. Between this and Argo.
This and Argo, and I want to say there was another one where he had a bit of that role, but either way, it's still great to see him in a movie, so I'm not going to complain.
Like, I'm just trying to think of what I would cast Kyle Chandler as to be ridiculous, and I can't think of anything. Like, even when I think of him in Friday Night Lights, he's still that character.
Wait a second. Think of him in King Kong.
Was he in that, or?
Yeah, he was the lead actor in the movie.
In the movie they were making in the movie?
He was like the goofy one with the eyebrows.
Holy shit, I haven't seen that movie since it came out. I didn't like that movie at all.
He is hilarious.
Oh, anyways, Corey, it's been glad to talk to you.
I'm sorry to destroy the movie.
You have no way to destroy this movie for me. Not at all.
I have to admit, I'm a little bit baffled, a little bit disconcerted by the fact that I'm one of the only people who seems to have these issues with the movie. Like, it seems to me most of the discussion around the movie is like either talking about it being a masterpiece, like unequivocally, or just talking about, you know, the torture scenes and whether the movie supports torture. And I'm like the one guy who's like, I don't think the movie is bad because it supports torture. I just don't think it's a very good movie, and I feel like I'm so alone.
Look, Corey, you are not alone. You just need to go and read Armin White's review, and you'll know you have very good company.
You joke about that. actually, did Armin White write a review of it? Or
he did. At least I've heard. I heard him talk about it on another podcast the other day, and I'm yet to seek out his review, but he is very, very negative towards this film.
I didn't read a review by him, but I heard him on the Slash Filmcast, which I assume is the one you're talking about.
Yeah.
And, you know, except for like some of the really, when he was commenting on like right wing and left wing stuff and all of that, that it was a little bit weird. I can't really get behind most of what he said in that respect, but you know, he basically said a lot of the same things that I said, which is that the movie lacks a character. The character is a cipher. The ending isn't earned because it doesn't build to that on a character or thematic level. He was saying a lot of the things that I actually agree with. You know, Armand White is a, you know, contrarian crackpot a lot of the times. But, you know, sometimes if you kind of read through things, you can see that he is saying some legitimate, you know, valid things, making some valid criticisms. And I think that in the case of that film, I definitely agree. Actually, quite frankly, even his take on Django was, except for the fact that it's not consistent with his love of certain other really awful movies, his take on Django was pretty reasonable as well. But I don't know. I just feel like Zero Dark Thirty is well made in a lot of ways. But I think that it's a bit undercooked. I mean, I can even get into, I suppose, why I think it's undercooked. I think a lot of it comes down to the script, which I don't know 100% what the process was, but I have a feeling like Mark Boal was doing the research and trying to piece together the narrative of like how everything went down and was like, how do I actually fit all this into a movie? And then he discovered this character that Maya's based on, the real CIA person. He was like, oh, here's a character and I can just string the movie along on her arc. And it feels that way to me. It feels like a character added in to string you along a narrative. But you know, it's a well-made movie, from a directorial standpoint. I think it's well-made for the most part. It's got good elements and most people seem to really like it. So, I certainly wouldn't dissuade people from seeing it, and especially not for the last hour or so of the movie.
I mean, I bring up Armin White and I bring him up in jest. I mean, I know that he is that contrarian fellow and I do get a lot of entertainment from a lot of his reviews because I disagree with them very much, but I agree with you very much that sometimes he does have a lot of very good points when it comes to cinema. If you look through a lot of his bullshit, you find a lot of interesting logic into his own viewpoint of cinema.
Focus on is the fact that he said that Taken 2 is a better examination of like the post 9/11 mindset than Zero Dark Thirty. If you just pay attention to that part, the guy is insane.
It makes you want to just choke out a part of the internet.
The work. But if you kind of ignore that kind of thing, and certainly not all of his reviews are like this, but I think that his take on Zero Dark Thirty was like that. You know, you read between some of the bullshit and you find some legitimate criticisms, you know, whether you agree with them or not, I think that, some of that's valid. I don't know. It's just, that's, and certainly it helps that I kind of agree with him.
It definitely does. But I think I'm going to wrap this one up at this point. So thank you again, Mr. Koryatad, for coming on and talking with me. Even though you're wrong.
Vent a little bit.
What? Sorry?
Vent a little bit. This has been helpful.
Yeah, I think that's what it's all about. It's all about helping us sleep easily at nights.
Yeah.
So people can find your writings over at the Movie Mezzanine right now?
Yeah, it's moviemezzanine.com. I'm writing there. Actually, quite frankly, you know, don't tell Sam this, but I probably should be writing a bit more than I am. But yeah, writing there, it's a pretty good site. I highly recommend everybody check it out. I think, you know, I think I'm an okay writer, but we've got some pretty good people there. Jake Cole, Andrea Storr is there, Danny Bowes. There's some really quality writers there, putting out some really good material. So, you know, go check that out.
Yeah, I must say, I've been a fan of the site from its opening.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And as usual, you can find the podcast and all of my insane ranting over at gmanreviews.com. Thanks so much for coming, and good night.